Welcome to the Grappling Discourse podcast. I'm your host, Matt Scaff, and today I want to talk about the beginner's class. I'm excited about today's episode. I think this is going to be one of my best episodes. The topic is really interesting and I think important. What does the perfect beginner class look like? I'm going to be giving you guys my opinion, but I want you to take a little bit of time. Just think for a couple of minutes. What does your perfect beginner class look like? Think of every little detail. Start with the warm-ups. Are the students going to be going up and down the mats doing forward and backwards rolls, shrimps and grambies? What about gymnastic movements? Are you going to be doing cartwheels, headstands, and handstand walks? What about calisthenics? Are you going to be jogging around the mat, getting into push-ups and core work? You're going to try and exhaust your students before you get into the techniques. You're going to skip all of that and just get right into the technique for the day. Who's going to teach the beginner class? Is it always going to be a black belt or maybe a senior student, a brown, purple, maybe even a blue belt's teaching? The curriculum, is it going to be self-defense or sport jujitsu based? Or is it going to be a mixture of the two? What about live training? Is there going to be any live training? Free rolling, specific sparring, or just none, zero? Competition, are you going to encourage beginners to go out and compete? Hey, you've been here a couple of weeks, the squad's going out to compete, you want to come? We'd love to have you. Or, wait till you've been training a year, maybe even more, before you go out and test yourself on the competition mats. How long is the class going to be? An hour? Or is it going to be longer, an hour and a half to 2 hours? How many days a week is your beginner class going to be? Are you going to offer it twice a week, every single day? What would you recommend to beginners? Now, over the years, I've trained at a lot of different schools. If I had to guess, I've probably trained, give or take, at 80 different schools. I've also met so many gym owners and people that work at martial art gyms. I really like to pick people's brains. So whether, you know, just you're a beginner, I like to ask about your experience in jiu-jitsu. If you come from another school and we get to talking, I want to know about like what you enjoy about your school. Now, when I'm talking to gym owners and instructors, I'll ask them about their programs. What is your strengths? Like, what are the strengths of your school? And then what are some of your weaknesses? What do you think you need to improve upon? I've also been really lucky to go to some pretty big martial art business conferences where a bunch of different martial artists, people that own schools as well as just teach at them and work at them, get together and they brainstorm and they try and improve how they run their own schools. So whenever I'm going, I'm thinking about how can I help 10th Planet Decatur be better? How can we get more students and how can we make those students better at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Now, here's the thing. Some of those business conferences, when you're listening to some of these people talk and they're sharing what they do at their schools, I mean, I'm just aghast that some of these people are getting away with what they do. I mean, some of these people are just doing some super McDojo-y things, trying to make a buck. Now, it's not always traditional martial arts. Now, I know a lot of people like to point fun at and like, oh, karate, like only 10-year-olds do that. But I'll be honest. I think that some of these traditional schools are really, really good. And I would recommend people to go and train at them if they're interested in those arts. Karate, for example, I think probably 25% of karate schools out there are really, really good. And you will find some value in training there. But I also think probably half of the karate schools are just straight McDojos. You're going to get your black belt in a couple of years and you're not going to be able to defend yourself against really anybody. But I've learned a lot from these karate like instructors, and some of these guys, like their keynote speakers are karate instructors, and some of their ideas of how they run their school are just genius. And they've helped me become a better martial artist and how I think about martial arts. Now, some of the people that have had some of the cringiest and most McDojo ideas have been Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Some of these really big Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools are doing some pretty lame things. And as I said, I'm just puzzled at how people train there. I mean, I get it. They're getting belts and it's really easy training and they think they're improving. But man, Open your eyes. You're at a McDojo. Now, I'm going to be giving you guys my opinion, but honestly, I haven't had a big hand in our beginners program the past couple of years. I got to give most, if not all, the credit to Brandon. While Brandon's the head instructor at our school, he primarily focuses on the beginners and the beginner curriculum. He is a genius. I really think Brandon's one of the top minds in the sport. And so some of the things I'm going to be sharing are just ideas and things that I've seen him implement over the years. I focus mostly on people that have been training a year or more. As you guys know, I'm coaching the people that are trying to be professionals at our gym. We have a handful that already are professionals that all they do is train full time. But I also spend most of my time working again with the people that are colored belts and that have been training for a year or more. So I'm going to be stealing some of Brandon's thoughts and ideas, but I also have some of my own. And those experiences have come with just the years and years of being in this sport. You guys know, though, I'm obsessed with improvement. How can I help people improve faster? One of the most important topics that people are still trying to figure out is how to make a beginner go from white belt to black belt as fast as possible. How can we take a beginner and make them a black belt in under 5 years? Nobody has figured out that formula. I believe it was John Donahue. I'm almost positive. He and Joe Rogan were talking about this, about how this is still the conundrum. He's not talking about the guys that train every single day. We know multiple people have taken guys that had never trained before and are competing at a very, very high level at the black belt level, in 5 years or under. But I don't think anybody's creating black belts out there for people that are just average Joes that are training 2-3 times a week. And your beginner curriculum and how you teach your beginners is going to play a huge part in that process. Now, at 10th Planet Decatur, we haven't always had a beginner's program. When I first started training there, there was no beginner program. Now, this is actually pretty common. There are a bunch of schools out there that really, they don't cater to beginners. And there's three big reasons why they do not have a beginner's program. One is there's just not enough students. It's a small school. There's no reason for the instructor to create a beginner's and advanced class. There's just not enough. And so everybody trains together just to get people on the mats. And so people have different training partners to train with. The second is the instructor's availability. A lot of instructors have 2 or 3 jobs and they just don't have enough time to teach a bunch of different classes. And so they just teach an all levels class. Classes where everybody trains together, and sometimes they'll have advanced classes, but they kind of skip out on the beginners. And then the third, I think this is less common, but usually these are some of the schools like in your area that everybody kind of knows about. And those are the competition schools, the schools that are just catering towards competitors. And they don't want to have beginner classes. If you're a beginner, you're brand new, you're coming in and it's sink or swim. You're either going to figure it out and you're going to become a monster or you're going to fade out. But they don't care. They're not trying to cater. They're catering towards the advanced students. And they're trying to create champions. That's their sole focus. Now, these schools, they get their new students from other local gyms. Guys come in, they're beginners, they start training there and they learn their fundamentals. But after they've done a couple competitions, they realize they really want to start competing. And they know this school across town has a great reputation for creating strong competitors, and they make a switch. They either cross train there, but a lot of times they'll just make the full switch and they'll start training. But you have to be pretty serious about jiu-jitsu to really start and stay at some of these competition style gyms. But as I said, 10th Planet Decatur for a long time did not have a beginner's program. I'd say our beginner's program probably started about 8 years ago. It started when Brandon went full time. So when I first started training with Brandon, there's probably 20 students and he had a second job. So he fell under both the first and the second category. There just wasn't enough students and he didn't have enough time to run a beginner's program as well as an advanced program. So he just had an advanced class, when you came in, I mean, he told you, he was like, you know, hey, everybody trains together. We focus on competition and the training's pretty hard. The training was really hard. Brandon, man, he really pushed people. He expected everybody to roll. He expected everybody to train hard and he treated everybody the same. Now, he was just a purple belt at the time, and there's probably six blue belts, but everybody was treated like, I mean, everybody was treated the same. Whether it was your first day or you'd been there from the beginning, I mean, if you stayed to do sparring, you did every single sparring round. Now, after we were introduced to Alan Belcher and we started going to some of these big business conferences, we realized, like, man, like, if we want to start making money, if Brandon wants to start making money, if 10th Planet Decatur wants to become a successful school, we have to create a beginner's program. And that's what Brandon did. Now, in the beginning, it was 1 hour and it was really basic. It was focused mainly on basic 10th Planet techniques, the lockdown, the rubber guard, the truck, some fundamentals like how to shrimp and recover your guard, a lot of escaping. But it also featured a lot of self-defense, a lot of the Gracie self-defense. And that was the curriculum. Now, that class was only held once or twice a week. I can't remember in the beginning. And after you had been in that class for a certain amount of time, you were then encouraged to start going into the all levels class or the advanced classes. Now, Brandon allowed anybody to come into those advanced classes, but like I said, if you came into those classes, you were treated like everybody else. So if you started sparring, you were expected to spar for however long or however many rounds were set. And I saw Brandon, you know, get on to dudes that had only been training a couple of weeks. They came in, they spazzed out and went super hard in the first round, and then they tried to set out the second. And Brandon was like, no. If you're in this class, you're in this class, and you're going to do the second round. Some of those guys stayed, but most of those guys, they didn't cut it. Now, the beginner class, as I said, was focused a lot on those basic techniques. They were focused on Gracie, the Gracie self-defense. They were focused on basic 10th Planet. And the big emphasis was on like warm-ups, just like making sure you could move on the ground. A lot of forwards and backwards rolls. Shrimping. Shrimping was a huge focus. Learning how to gramby was a huge focus. Since it's been around 8 years, one of the big changes that Brandon has made to the beginner program is he has cut out all warm-ups. There is no calisthenics, there's no jogging around the mat, there's no forward and backward rolls, up and down the mats, and a lot of shrimping. And I'm a big fan of this. The reason is that most people half-ass these movements anyways. Most people come in and they do the crappiest shrimps you'll ever see. And their shrimps are these big, exaggerated. They're trying to move up and down the mats as fast as possible. And look, I was right there. When I was a white and blue belt and I was doing shrimps, I wanted to be fast. I wanted to show people that I could get up and down the mats as quickly as possible. I thought that meant that I was doing them well. Well, now I know. It's like, look, those are the most unrealistic shrimps. Nobody shrimps like that. Nobody's doing these big jackknife movements. That's not how you utilize and use shrimps during a live roll. So what's the point in doing them? What Brandon has incorporated instead of all of that is he's incorporated a flow that lasts 1 month long. Now, Eddie Bravo, his curriculum for his beginner class is all based on the 10th Planet warm-ups. And for a while, Eddie wanted every school to be on the same page. He wanted every school to be synced into the 10th Planet warm-ups. If you haven't seen them, they're on YouTube. I'm not sure if it's the latest warm-ups because they're always evolving. But I remember when the warm-ups first came out because I was teaching. I was teaching class for a couple of months after Brandon's neck surgery, and I was teaching the 10th Planet warm-ups. But they've evolved so much since then. And in my opinion, they've gotten too long. That's just my opinion. What we've done is we've utilized Eddie's idea of making the beginners go through flows where both partners have to do techniques. There's an A and a B. There's a back and forth. And it teaches people how to move, how to react, how to counter. And I think it's genius. And so I think Eddie, like, it works for his school doing the 10th Planet warm-ups. But our school has really thrived since we've taken that warm-up idea and Brandon's created his own curriculum. So each month he has a new flow. The flow can be based around anything. This past month it was based around leg locks. And the flow was, it was looking into getting into the honey hole position. And then there was a couple of movements after that. Typically Brandon's flows are between 4 and 6 movements long. Where some of the 10th Planet warm-ups, I mean, they get into like 10 movements. Where both people are doing like 4 and 5 movements. And we found that, again, it was just a little too hard for us to teach. And we really, really like, or I should say Brandon really likes teaching flows that are 4 to 6. 4 to 6 techniques. And the students use the first 15 minutes of class to go through this flow. Now, the first week of the month, you will learn the flow. So all students know, like, hey, if I want to be in sync with the school's curriculum, if I'm a beginner, I should be there the first week. So 4 classes, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, or I guess it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday now. You're learning that flow. And then the next week, you'll start first 15 minutes class, you'll warm up with it, and then you'll get into the technique of the day. And the technique always comes off of the flow. Now, like as I said, this past month, it was, the main focus was getting into the honey hole, but that can look so many different ways. And I know Brandon taught a variety of different techniques throughout the month, but the main focus was, as I said, getting into that inside heel hook position. Now, when it comes to teaching, who's teaching the class? So that's how we warm up, and I think that's the perfect way. Have a flow. Now, when it comes to who's teaching the class, Brandon's, for the most part, taught the beginner class. He's always loved teaching average Joes and just the dads, the moms, the people that aren't trying to be world champions. He loves that. Where I love teaching the people that are trying to become world champions. That's why our relationship's so good. We just balance each other out very, very well. But Brandon's taught it for the most part. But there was a time, I would say about a year, where Brandon gave up the beginner class and he had multiple different purple belts teach. So he was a black belt. He was just teaching the advanced classes and the day classes, and our beginner program was being taught by the purple belts. Now, the purple belts had to run everything they taught by Brandon first. So there wasn't free rein, teach whatever you want. It was no, you have to run every single class by Brandon first. You should have your curriculum written out for the month. Since there were multiple, it wasn't like they were just teaching, 4 classes a week and they had this, super tough job of creating all these different classes. It's like, no, they were teaching once a week. There was a couple of them. There was 3 of them. So they each, were teaching once a week. They had to come up with 4 classes for the month. And they'd run it by Brandon, and then they'd teach the classes. And people really enjoyed that. I know a lot of people really vibed with one of the guys. So some people really liked, one of the guys, but then other people would really vibe with another. And it was cool to see how people people learn differently and how some people learn better from one guy while some other people learn better from this other person. But if I'm being honest, you just cannot replace a black belt with a purple belt. I know that there are some good purple belt teachers out there. As I said, the people that were teaching at our school that were purple belts did a good job. But you just cannot replace a black belt's experience and just overall knowledge. The purple belts were really restricted to teaching a handful of the techniques they were good at. They really had to focus on their strong areas, but at purple belt, you still have so many weaknesses, and there's just so many things that you're just not qualified to teach. You don't understand the principles and concepts of jiu-jitsu at the level of black belt as well, so it is tougher for you to teach something outside the realm of what you do. I remember teaching at purple belt. If it wasn't something that was in my game, I struggled. I struggled to express in words how to do something if it wasn't something I did very well. Where at black belt now, I can watch techniques and I can just understand how they work. And that's what I'm saying. When Brandon teaches now, I mean, he's been a black belt for 7 years. When he teaches, he can just break things down to where anybody can understand. Almost everything, he can just look at it and break it down. And he's communicated and he's taught thousands of classes now. Purple belts, they don't have that teaching experience. They don't have the thousands of hours of teaching. They haven't taken people from white to blue belt. They don't have that experience of taking somebody from day one to blue belt. Where the black belt, they have tons and tons of that experience. By the time you're a black belt, you've helped tons and tons of people make that journey. And I think that's super important. I think the more and more blue belts you create, good quality blue belts, the easier it becomes. And I've seen that with Brandon. He's constantly trying to make that process shorter and shorter. As I said, he's obsessed with that question John here was talking about. How do I create and make average Joes, guys that are beginners, how do I take them from day one to black belt in under 5 years? And Brandon understands that a lot of that is going to be with his beginner program, creating the best beginner program that he can. And so I think you need a black belt teaching it. Now, if your school doesn't have a black belt, then obviously it should be your head instructor, who is the highest ranking guy. They should be teaching the beginner program. What about live training? I've heard a bunch of different ideas on this. I know schools that don't allow live training, like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools that do not allow live training. Some of the schools that are gi schools that do stripes, they don't allow live training until you've hit your second stripe. There are tons. Just go on Reddit. You'll find hundreds of people talking about that. I've been to these business conferences where a lot of the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools say, hey, one of the best things we ever did for our beginner program was not allow them to spar, because that's the reason people quit. They get frustrated, they get their ass kicked a couple of times, and they just don't come back. And I understand Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is difficult. But in my opinion, the answer is not doing no rolling. Now, there was one school in particular, and I'm not going to name any names, but this school was really, really successful. I mean, this school was bringing in hundreds of thousands of dollars revenue every single year. And their instructors were giving a keynote speech a few years ago at one of the business conferences I went to. And they were talking about their beginner program. And that was like the big thing they talked about, was not allowing, like, do not under any circumstances allow the beginners to roll live. Now, their beginner program lasted 6 months. And it was taught by a couple of their blue belts. So they had blue belt instructors teaching brand new people. And you would go over, and obviously the curriculum was made by the black belt at the school. And the blue belts would teach that curriculum. And you had to graduate from the beginner class. And then from there, you would go into basically a second beginner class. But this beginner class was basically for two-stripe white belts and up. And you could start sparring. But the sparring in that class was focused mostly on, so the first class, no sparring. The second class, once you graduated, you kind of then moved into more positional sparring. So you talked about the importance of, you know, limiting the chaos. Hey, have students start with an objective. The first objective that he's like, I love sparring from the mount. When students in mount, they're trying to stay on top or submit. The bottom person is trying to escape. That's it. And you give them these objectives. And that's what he really liked about these specific sparring situations, is that you can give very clear objectives. There isn't any guard passing. There's not all these, you know, there's not going to be bombarded with technique after technique, and they're not going to get tapped 100,000 times. It's like, no, this is controlled. So it's their first look. They've been training for about 6 months now. Now they're ready to start getting into some controlled sparring. And, you know, I'm listening to this, and I think this is straight crap. In my opinion, it's still some of the most McDojo-y stuff I've ever heard. I think that students should start sparring when they want to. Now, at our gym, you come in. If you are not a member, you do not spar. We do allow people, like if they wrestled in college or something like that, if they have grappling experience, they wrestled for a couple of years, they can roll. Now, I encourage them not to. I'll be like, hey, you know, but if they're like, no, I really want to roll. It's been for a while, and I want to go out there and wrestle. Then we'll let them. But if you have zero experience, we do not allow you to train. Now, at our gym, we do an hour-long class, and then we set the timer 3 6-minute rounds. Now, we've experimented a bunch with this. I know, as I said with Brandon, when he first started the beginner class, there wasn't any sparring. And if there was, it was situational sparring. And he told people, he said, hey. Now, he wasn't limiting them just in the beginner class, but you were able to come to the advanced class. But he'd always say, like, hey, if you come to the other classes, like, get your game face on. We're not going to treat you like beginner. You're going to come in and you're going to train like everybody else. But in that class specifically, it was, hey, you know, you're just going to learn techniques. We're going to do a lot of drilling. And I know he introduced some positional sparring to them. But it's evolved, and over the years, it went from like 3 5-minute rounds to, I know he messed around with like doing 30 minutes for beginners, but he really likes just 3. And it's been 3 6-minute rounds for the longest time now. And there's zero pressure to roll. You do not have to roll at all. And we tell people that. Hey, when you feel comfortable, go out there and do one round. That's what I always recommend. I think there needs to be some encouragement for the beginners, like encouragement in like, hey, like go out and try it. Yeah, go roll with him. Go do one round. But I don't think you should ever force them to do something. But you need to encourage them to get outside their comfort zone. Because a lot of people, if you do not do that, they'll hinder their development because they won't push themselves. In my opinion, people are coming to us to push them a little bit, to make them better versions of themselves, to make them get outside their comfort zone so they can see real progress. And so I tell people, I'm like, look, you know, go out there and do one round. Your goal is over the course of 6 months, you should be able to do all 3 6-minute rounds. And then when you come to some of the other classes that maybe have 6 rounds or 10 rounds, most of our classes have 10 6-minute rounds set. You really want to work up to where you can do 30 minutes. And I tell them that. I say, hey, all blue belts, in my opinion, should be able to roll 30 straight minutes. Win or lose, doesn't matter. They should be able to roll 30 minutes. You guys have heard me talk about that a bunch. And so when I'm giving and prescribing beginners, new, brand new people to like, hey, how do I get to this point? After they do their first round, almost all of them come up to me and they're just dead. Since I'm their first person they meet, a lot of the beginners for the first couple of weeks will come up to me and ask me questions because I'm the guy that sold them the membership. And so they'll go, man, this rolling thing is way harder than I thought it was. I did one round and I was dead and I woke up the next day and I was sore. And I'll just go, hey, well, keep doing one round. Do one round until that feels pretty comfortable, which should be a couple of more weeks. Your first month, maybe just stick with one round. Then add a second round. Do 2 rounds. Then add that 3rd round. And then whenever you feel comfortable, start coming to some of the other classes because we want you to be able to do 30 straight minutes. And this has worked really, really well. Because as I said, when you force people, like if you go to a gym and they force you to do 30 straight minutes on your first day, that's too much for most people. If you're not young or you're not just super like, this is what you're looking for, you know that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is for you and it just clicks, then you're not going to come back. And after especially a couple of those types of practices where you're a 38-year-old out-of-shape dad, you're a mom who's got a 2-year-old at home, it's waking you up at all hours of the night, and you have to come in and spar with 22-year-old girls that are trying to go out there and compete, like you're not going to come back. It's just too discouraging. And so, as I said, I think you have to encourage but not force. And there's just some days I tell people, I'm like, look, you know, if you had a bad day, you woke up super late, you know, all it took everything you had to just come in and take the class. Like, hey, don't be afraid to sit out from sparring. Or This is your third beginner class of the week. You spar the other 2 days. You're a little sore. Take off this day. Take off this day. You're not a competitor yet. Don't worry about it. No sparring. It leads people getting into a false sense of confidence. People can figure out even after just one round. The last thing I want people to do is get false confidence. And I think that's what happens at a lot of these places. People are learning these badass techniques. So at that school I was talking about, their beginners aren't sparring for the first 6 months, and then they're getting into some live situational sparring. But they're learning all these cool techniques, triangle chokes, rear naked chokes, and they're thinking they're able to perform it. Because after a few months, they're starting to do it, the techniques more like smoother, and they feel like they're really improving. And so they think they're going to be able to do this against someone resisting. And the reality is they aren't. And that is a huge shock. And to me, that's more discouraging than going out and getting your ass kicked. There's something really helpful, I think, is when you're kind of put in your place and you kind of realize where you stand. Now, it's discouraging when you overdo that. When you go in and you just get beat up for 5 rounds, you're not ready for that. But if you just go out and do 1 round, it keeps you humble and it keeps you, in my opinion, wanting to come back for more, wanting to improve, wanting to get a little bit better each and every time. So I think that's the way to do it. Now, if I was like really writing like a playbook for like how to get your blue belt as quick as possible, I would start and I would really create a game plan to get somebody to that 30 minutes. Like I would sit down with them and I would write it out for them and like, hey, at the end of a year, I want you to be rolling at a pretty good clip for 30 straight minutes. I want you to be able to defend yourself. I want you to be able to survive and escape for 30 straight minutes. I want you to be able to throw some offensive movements at guys that are blue belts and under. Now, the curriculum I've already talked a little bit about. As I said, Brandon's turned into flows, like month-long flows, where the technique for the day will come off of that flow, but there is a core theme for the month. Now, I know for a long time, our classes were more singular based. Like you would come in and for that week, you'd be going over guillotine chokes and you'd be just looking at guillotines. I know we also experimented for a while for doing 2 weeks, and Brandon would teach the lockdown for 2 weeks and you would just go over the lockdown and you would do the bumps and you would whip them up and down and get up to dogfight and you would do all the dogfight sweeps, but it was very like singular focused. There wasn't really a flow. And I feel that the flows, as I said, like what Eddie did with the 10th Planet warmups was genius. Now, I remember the first time, especially like when I was a brown belt. And as the 10th Planet warmups kept developing, I thought they'd become too advanced. And I was like, man, how is a beginner supposed to learn some of these flows? They're getting into like heel hook situations. They're doing all these crazy grambies. And I just thought it was too advanced. But I was blown away because there's been times where we focused and done some of the flows that they've been 10th Planet warmups. And always by the end of the month, I see people that just started, they're doing these complicated flows pretty damn well. And I always chuckle to myself and go, yeah, that's why you always need to remind yourself, you know, just remember, Eddie's the man for a reason. You know, Brandon is the man for a reason. These guys know what they're doing. They know what they're talking about. And what I'm trying to say is that beginners can learn some pretty complicated sequences if you present it to them properly and you allow them time to get the movements down. And if you just go and you've never seen the 10th Planet warmups, just look up some of them and you'll be shocked. Like if you've never done them, you're like, damn, that looks pretty complicated. You expect somebody that's been there 2 weeks to learn that? And I'm telling you, it doesn't matter the athleticism level. It doesn't matter how smart or any of that. I've seen everyone in a 50-person class learn a complicated flow and at the end of the month be able to do it really, really well. And it's just, it's super cool. Now, how much self-defense and sport jiu-jitsu based? I know for a while, Brandon, you know, was really obsessed with like teaching Gracie self-defense. And he would have periods throughout the year where he would go over some of the Gracie, you know, self-defense techniques. He would look at the hip tosses and how to escape bear hugs and looking at technical stand-ups and all of that. It's my opinion now that if a student is live training, if you're going over takedowns, if you're going over pins, if you're going over how to recover your guard, you don't really need to go in depth for one-on-one self-defense situations. I think that basic takedowns, basic pinning ideas, and basic escapes back to your guard and just understanding where somebody can hit you is enough. Like, you don't need to focus on, and I think a lot of the Gracie self-defense stuff is genius. Let me just say that. Like, some of the best stuff you can learn is just get on Gracie, you know, in action or the Gracie website, go learn from Henner and Huron, their, you know, the way they teach those Gracie self-defense techniques. I mean, you will learn a ton. And I think it's super important for even like advanced practitioners to look at that stuff every once in a while. But at the same time, I'm pretty convinced, as I said, that you can just teach people if you just have a month. If you have a beginner for a year and you spend a month on takedowns and pinning and then another month on recovering back to your guard and then maybe a class or two on like how to technical stand up and you get them in there live rolling, doing some situational sparring, that they will be able to defend themselves in a one-on-one no weapon situation. I'm serious. I really, really believe that. Now, Brandon has implemented some days, like he'll come in and the students will, so this is usually like the middle of the month. So everybody that's been there from the beginning, they've got the flow down. After they've done the flow for 10, 15 minutes, they'll then start getting into some situational sparring. So if the movement of the month is starting from the half guard, they'll do some half guard sparring. If it's takedowns, they'll do some takedown work. And implementing live drilling, like situational sparring, I should say, at the right time in the month, I think has also been crucial to beginner development. I've seen our beginners get better faster, and it's a beautiful thing to see. More and more guys are getting promoted to blue belt. Now, obviously, as the school gets bigger and bigger, that just means more and more people are up for promotion, but man, I'm seeing some of these dudes, they're training 3 days a week and they're becoming gangsters, man. These dudes are tough. I can think of four or five guys right now that if Brandon gave them a blue belt this next upcoming week, I'd be like, yeah, it's about time. And they've only been training maybe 14, 15 months. So it shows me that we are creating blue belts quicker. Now, I tell guys two times a week, come in two times a week. If you can do that, you will improve. Our beginner classes are 100 or an hour of instruction. So if you just come twice a week for a year, I mean, you're looking at what? It's 52 weeks in a year. You're looking at 104 hours of instruction. And then give or take 10, 15 minutes every single time of live sparring and training. Some days it's going to be a little bit more if they're doing situational sparring during that class. And then there also might be days where after you've been there 6 months, you might stick around for a different class and you're getting in more live training as well. But you're looking at 100 hours of instruction and then maybe 4 or 5 hours of live sparring. Like, you're going to be able to defend yourself. You're going to be able to do that. And so I recommend twice a week. I tell people, though, that there is a big difference between students that come in twice a week and three times a week, and then obviously twice a week and four times a week. If I could get every one of our students to come in four times a week, that's what I would recommend. Like, please come in four times a week. Do it. It'll be the best thing. You do that for a year, you'll be shocked how much better you get. If one of your peers came in and you guys started around the same time, maybe they even started a month before you, I guarantee you come four times a week and they come twice a week, you will be better at the end of a year. At the end of their year, you've been training 11 months, you will be better than them. It's just mad hours. But I think you can get good training twice a week. But I think you can get really, really good training four times a week. Our classes right around an hour and 15 minutes. I think 2 hours is way too long for a beginner. Hour and 15 minutes is perfect. So what do you guys think? Is there anything you can think that I missed? What does your perfect beginner class look like? Competition. That's the last thing we got to talk about. I think people in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu should be able to compete whenever they want, as long as they understand how to tap. I have had and seen students start competing right at a month. Some of those guys, they went out there and they won a match. I've never seen a student win a tournament in that short a time. But I've seen people go out there and have fun, and that is a catalyst for their growth. They go out and compete, they have fun, and then they really decide instead of training twice a week, they want to come in and start training three and four times a week. So I think competition really is only, it's only been a good thing. Only one time did we have a student get injured, but it's because they just wouldn't tap. They'd only been training a couple of weeks, and they invited their girlfriend to come to the competition. Get stuck in Americana. I'm telling them to tap. I'm like, hey, tap. Just tap. They didn't tap, got their arm, elbow popped, and never came back. But other than that, if their ego's not, you know, as my man's was way out of control with his girlfriend watching, if they're able to tap, I think it's only a good thing. Because as I said, you go out there and compete, almost always it lights a fire underneath these guys. And they want to get better. They want to come in and train more. So if they were coming twice a week for that month, then they went out and competed, I guarantee they're going to come back and they're going to train three or even four times a week. Competition is one of the best ways to get better, and only because it motivates you. I've talked about this on other episodes. I do not think competition is necessary to get world-class at jiu-jitsu. I mean, obviously, John Donahue's the most brilliant mind right now in jiu-jitsu, he never competed. So if he never competed, anybody, like, you can do what John Donahue did. It was just a lot of sacrifice, a lot of study, and a lot of time on the mats. But I think a lot of times competition can make people focused, and it can really just push people to come in and take training more seriously. So we encourage it. It's something Brandon's always done, and I think it's a good thing. Until next time, guys. I love and appreciate you. This podcast is almost. I mean, I'm on my way to 1,000. I really want to hit 1,000 people listening to every episode. I'm getting close. We're past 600. We're on our way to 700. It's been a journey. Till next time, guys. Peace.